All right, good evening. Welcome to the Champaign City Council study session for June 27th, 2023.
Madam Mayor, I move that we approve the minutes of June 6, 2023 regular council meeting.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Am I turning it over to Bruce? All right.
Good evening. We are here tonight to talk about the proposed development services audit. Council will recall that as part of the budget we are just finishing up, $75,000 was allocated to hire a consultant to review our development services, make sure our processes are all current and operating as efficiently as possible, look for any ways to improve. This is particularly important with the approval of OpenGov as our new permitting software, which means that we'll want to make sure that that we've honed our processes to fit that software and to make us as efficient as possible. We'll also look at elements like customer service and whether there's any need for training in that area as well. Have our consultant here with us, as well as their sub-consultant. And I'll let Alan introduce himself and Fred.
Thanks, Bruce. Alan Pennington, Senior Vice President with the Matrix Consulting Group, and we look forward to talking to you a little bit about our proposal and answering any questions.
Fred Coleman, sub-consultant to Matrix Consulting Group.
So we selected Matrix for a couple of reasons. One was that they took our CDAP program seriously, and they found a minority sub-consultant to work with and to make sure that you know, we have a good, diverse team working on this project. They also laid out a process that we thought was very likely to lead to success and to allow us to find improvements. I'll let them talk about it more in detail, but the key to that is making sure we engage all the stakeholders that are involved in the process, from internal staff to developers to others that go through our processes. So I'm going to put up this slide, which shows the process as it was laid out. You'll note that we're about a month later in starting than we had originally discussed, but otherwise the time frame works out about the same to end by the end of the year. And I'll turn it over to Alan to go over this.
Great. Thanks, Bruce. I'll just give you a quick overview of the typical approach that we take in conducting these studies. I know you have our proposal, and we've done literally hundreds of dedicated development review studies in our firm's existence and in our project team's career. So we start off with having a project initiation session with staff to make sure we fully understand the scope, even though we'll have agreed to it and contracted to it. But the nuances, talk about the data collection. The first major task is what we call the current state assessment, and that is principally focused on documenting your existing processes, procedures, staff allocation, staff responsibilities, and workload. It gives us that baseline of where you are today. So as we go through and do the analysis and analytics throughout the process, we can show you how the recommendations are going to change your current state, whether that's in staffing, procedures, or operations. The other critical thing of that current state assessment is making sure that we understand the Champaign way of doing things, so we're not making assumptions based upon work we've done with other communities. At the end of each of these tasks, there's an interim deliverable that's provided to staff, so they have the opportunity to review and comment on that as we go through the process, rather than waiting for a final report and then having an opportunity for input. In task three, we are proposing to do a dedicated process diagramming of the major development review processes. And how we do that is to use what typically called swim lanes. I won't get into all the details, but it shows each department and their role in the process. We can identify whether it's automated or a manual component of the process. And this will really help you as you're implementing OpenGov and putting new procedures in place. It also allows us to evaluate more effectively opportunities to streamline that process and further automate it. In task four, which is another data collection phase, is where Fred is going to help us the most. We are going to do a pretty comprehensive outreach effort, both with a stakeholder survey, so an open survey, probably use 2 or 3 years of your applicant's data, you know, and ask them for input, but also doing 3 focus group meetings. And it's really critical for us to hear directly from your customers what their challenges are. And it's really important that we hear from a diverse group of your applicants. It needs to range not just based upon demographics of age, race, and sex, but by type of developer. There's a big difference from what homeowners who come in to get one permit in their lifetime understand about the process, and what a national developer who has dozens of employees working on their application understand. We need to make sure that we're looking at it from all those perspectives. So it'll be really important as we go through this phase that we work closely with staff to make sure we're inviting the right people to the table, both to answer the survey online and then the more deeper dive where we talk with them in person and virtually to understand what their challenges are. It can be everything from processes, technology, the clarity of your requirements, the way staff enforce them. A whole variety of things can come out of this. There will also be things that come out that probably aren't factual, and we'll sort through that also. There will be a lot of complaints that when we dig into the data, we'll say it doesn't really support that. But we have to hear that. So our goal in this sort of effort is that if we're here 6 months from now presenting the final report, nobody can stand up and say, I didn't have an opportunity to have input. So we want you to throw those people at us who are calling you, complaining, bending your ear, so that we can hear them and factor it into this. In task five, we do a best practices assessment where we compare your current practices in development review against national standards and prevailing practices from other communities. It does 2 important things. One, it allows us to highlight the strengths of the current process. And when people read our reports, they're going to immediately go to the table of recommendations. That's where we're fixing things. We also like to highlight in here, there will be many things we identify you're doing well. And it's important for a balanced report to pull those out because we want to build upon your strengths, whether that's process strengths, staff strengths, procedure strengths. So this will allow us quickly to identify the current strengths and what those potential opportunities for improvement might be. Task six is basically our main analytical phase. That's where we're taking all the data input, looking at the data, analyzing it, and developing recommendations based upon the issues identified in that best practices assessment. And then step 7 is really pulling all that interim deliverables together into a formal report with an implementation plan, and for each recommendation providing cost impacts. It could be the cost to implement or the cost savings, technology changes, process changes, the priority of them, a time frame associated with them, so that you really have a game plan that you can work through in making these changes and measure your progress against. And we work closely with staff and ask for their input, especially on the time frame, because we know once this becomes public, even if you agree with 100% of them, if you say, yes, we're going to do these all in 2 years, and you do them in 2 years and 1 month, somebody's going to say, look, it took longer than you expected. So we want to make sure we're not overly aggressive, and we want to make sure where there are financial requirements, you have time to put it into your budget cycle and plan for that. And I think, so that's in a nutshell, the overall process. And I mentioned, but I want to mention again, at each stage, there's that interim deliverable. And that's really critical for us to get staff input throughout this. Development review is not the sole responsibility of one person. There's multiple departments that play a part of this. And from our perspective, the city of Champaign's only going to be viewed as successful as the weakest link in that development review process. So we need to take that comprehensive look and make sure that everyone has what they need to be successful in providing those services, and share with you best practices that others have used. Some of those may require policy changes, and where so, we'll note that so that you have that opportunity to understand the pros and cons of those changes. So we're really excited. This is an area that we get really excited about working in. It's one where you can have a fairly immediate impact on the perceptions of your governmental services and the public's perception and the development community's perception. And we're very fortunate to have Fred on our team because he's, you know, a master at this, but being local will also help us with those focus groups. It makes it much easier to schedule them, do them in person, and provide that context of the local ways. So, quick overview, and we're happy to answer any questions you'd like.
I'll just note real quickly that a good example of, you know, our opportunity here with Trackit, our former permitting software. We were never able to take payments online, and we weren't able to receive digital submittals of building permit applications. OpenGov will allow us to do that. We want to make both those things, and we've been buying the hardware pieces to be prepared to do that. But as we set that up, we want to make sure our process reflects that change and incorporates how we're going to do that exactly to be as customer friendly as possible. We plan to bring this contract to you on July 11th for approval, subject to any comments you have tonight. And as Alan said, we're happy to take any questions.
Any technical questions? Councilmember Shannon.
So I have two. I think these are technical questions. So the first one is, will there be, at the end, will there end up being like a series of steps for smaller developers? So someone who is new to development is able to kind of get walked through the process?
So in our typical best practices assessment, one of the things we look at is the type of educational materials that a community makes available to the public. If this is a critical issue, we can make sure we put a little bit more focus on that. There are things we've seen other communities do, such as a monthly how to develop educational series, and making those type of things available in addition to just stuff online. There are other times where they'll have open office hours where you can schedule time to come in and say, here's my concept, I don't know how to get through the process or what I need to do. And this is where, you know, we need to make sure. Sometimes the challenge is your applicants don't even know they need a permit. So first we need them to know that they need a permit, and then how to get through that process to an approval. So,
great. My second question is related. I'm just curious if you have heard of, I know there's a couple of cities across the country that are doing pre-approved patterns. So that, and I know like South Bend, Indiana, and Bryan, Texas is experimenting with those. Is that something that you tend to recommend? Is that moving into best practices, or is that still kind of a new thing?
It's new in some areas. It's been done for 15 years and or more in others. One of the first studies I did after joining the firm in 2005 was in Lee's Summit, Missouri, then a much smaller community than they are now. But at that point in time, they were doing that. As long as, so they're pre-approving the building plans, and then when you come in for zoning approval and get that done, you say, I'm going to do option 1A. And the building itself is already pre-approved. So yes, there are a lot of things like that you can do to expedite the process in terms of making it much faster to get through the process.
Great, thank you.
Sure.
Councilmember Pianfetti.
Thank you, Your Honor. And thank you for the presentation and the work that I hope you will continue to do with us. I had a question about the stakeholder survey focus groups, and I was curious as to how it would be communicated to those in the community, or how you would be collecting information to get a good cross-section of our community and to be able to get enough information to know really where there might be those sticking points.
Yeah, so great question. And until we, you know, get into this a little bit more in discussion, I'll tell you what we typically do, and we'll have to work out the specific rollout plan with staff. But one of the things we start with is if there are email addresses that have been collected for several years as part of the application process, we can start with that as a database. And because we do these surveys electronically, you can send it out to all of them and ask them for input. In some cases, we have databases that are tens of thousands, and so we sometimes sample, especially when we go to the focus group meetings. But generally, we can send it out to every applicant in the last 3 years. You can put a link on your website. you can have a flyer at the permitting counter. We've sometimes involved chambers of commerce, trade groups to also get the word out to their membership about the survey as well as the focus groups, because it's usually not too difficult to get participation in the survey at a level and at a cross section to get a good snapshot. The harder thing is getting people to commit to coming to a meeting and talking publicly. So we do a variety of things in terms of we do virtual, we'll do an individual interview if needed, but that's really important that we get a good cross section. If we only have landscape architects at the focus group, we're only gonna get one perspective on the process. We need large developers, small developers, national developers, local developers. We need those that have been denied, those that have been approved. I mean, we are going to hear conflicting information, and that's okay, because it may be different based upon where they're coming from, you know, their level of expertise, the size of the firm, all those things impact, you know, how they interact. So, one of you mentioned earlier, the first time somebody does business here, they're going to find Champaign's processes very different than what they're used to, as opposed to somebody local who's pulling a permit a week. They know who to call to get something done. They know what's being looked at. They know how to submit it and get it through. We need to make accessible that information to let everyone get through that. So at the same time, when we do that stakeholder survey, we can let you know also so you can share it with people. This is not a limited group. We want it to disperse as widely as possible and hear from everyone that is willing to share their voice to it. That's how you're going to have the best outcome and make sure that the information we have includes everyone that's coming to see you and talk to you and complain or praise, whatever it might be.
Thank you. Councilmember Fulmer.
Thank you, Your Honor, and thank you to you all for starting this work. I'm sorry if I'm being dense here. I'm trying to, or perhaps I got distracted, I don't really know. But so is the ultimate goal, is the focus on the OpenGov implementation, or is it really much more holistic than that?
It's a good question. It's more holistic than that. So the time, we would have done this even without the implementation of OpenGov because we felt like it was time. The last time we did a complete comprehensive review of our development services process was in the 90s, and we pretty much followed those recommendations ever since. A lot has changed since then, and OpenGov is one thing that's changing right now that we know will have new opportunities to enhance our process using the capabilities of that new software that Trackit didn't allow us to do. So it's really just one aspect of the review, but it's key in terms of the opportunity to do it as we implement OpenGov and make sure that we marry the recommendations that come out of this report with that implementation process.
And then one other question. Does it tend to be true that this kind of review can lead to understanding efficiencies better in ways that would reduce our costs, our expenses in the future, or does it usually end up recommending additional staff, for example?
Great question. Well, the two most expensive recommendations that typically would come out of a study like this are technology improvements, which you've already made a commitment to changing your technology. So we're really not focused on that other than how do we give you the best processes that you can use to implement. So the timing is absolutely perfect because there's nothing worse than implementing the software. And we've done this. A community will have implemented the software, then a year later ask us, and we'll say, here's the best process. And like, we're going to have to redo the whole system. Yep. And staffing. I don't know what our recommendation with staffing will be because I don't know yet if your staff are overworked, underworked. We do sometimes make changes in the type of positions we recommend. You know, so we may look and say, in some communities, we'll say you need more people on the intake phase, more permit clerks who can provide that application review and handholding on the front end. Sometimes we need more plan reviewers. There are ways, sometimes we look and we say, really you need to contract out the peaks and valleys because you don't need a full-time person, but you need relief when it's high. So I don't know what that input would be, but those are the ones that typically have the greatest cost impact. Probably the most difficult operational changes are when we find something in the code and it's a major change. And that sometimes has a lot of politics tied into it. You know, giving you one example, it's a real one, but I won't name where it's from. So the one community we worked with, and the delay was principally because there were too many approvals that were coming to the city council for approval, things that should have been done administratively, but through a whole variety of issues in the past, where problems that occurred, they just added multiple layers. So much was going to the council that the process to get there and to get the approval was adding a lot of time to the process. So we recommended eliminating that and looking, it's not best practice, nobody's else doing that. That's why you hire professional staff to make that decision. If they're not comfortable making it, get them training, help them understand, fix the process. Those are sometimes the harder ones when you're changing people's roles and authority and shaking up the whole pot. You know, so that's why we try to lay it out, the pros and cons of that and the benefits, and still your choice to make how you want to do the policy. But our thought is, okay, but then you have to accept that it's going to take 6 weeks longer to get a permit approved. And if that's what you want to live with, then that's okay. So those are the type of things we try to share with you to help you make informed decisions.
Yeah, I would say one part of the discussion that I've seen happen other places out of this kind of a process is there's a recommendation that if you want to reduce the time in the process by X, you need to add staff. And you sit down and talk with the development community and say, is this an improvement in process that you'd like to see? And are you willing to have increased fees to help pay for it? And oftentimes they are.
Yeah. Some of our biggest supporters in making significant changes have been the development community. They said, if you commit to make these changes, we think it's going to be better, and we'll support you by paying the fees required. However, if you don't make the improvements after raising the fees, we're going to be back, you know, more than ever. But, I mean, it really is as simple as predictable processes for them. It's everyone says, you know, time is money. Well, it really is. And if they're getting good service, they're willing to pay for the right type of service. I mean, at the same time, you want to be efficient and effective because there are limits. It's much easier for a larger developer to accommodate an additional fee than it is for a smaller project where that could be the big difference between go or no go. So we need to be cognizant of that also.
Great. Was anybody else looking at the city manager's face when he suggested eliminating council from the steps? Okay, I see Kathy Shannon has one, but you've gone, so I'm going to get back to you. Councilmember Beck.
Thank you. My question is around, you know what? I just totally slipped my mind. I had it in my brain. Oh, I know what it was. Mine is around cross-departmental coordination. And will that be part of this? It won't just be looking at our planning and development department. We'll be looking at, for example, inspections as well, which are over in our fire department. So that's a yes.
Yeah, we had all three departments involved in the consultant selection mm-hmm. process. They have already submitted a data request for us that's been circulated to all three departments that are involved in development services we're putting together and loading up on a Teams site that they have access to. But it'll. That's a really key part of this, so I'm glad you mentioned it, is that interaction between how we operate, especially in remote locations. You know, we've always said we have a virtual one-stop shop. I think that'll be even more true with the full implementation of OpenGov, you know, versus some places put all the people that are involved in that process in one physical location. I don't know that that's necessary. But if they think, you know, if they look at it and say, yeah, I think that would be better, they're going to make that recommendation.
It's critical you look at the entire thing. I think I mentioned earlier, you're only as good as your weakest link. So if one component is understaffed or has different review time periods, the whole process is going to be out of sync. So we need to, on a development review, it needs to be the city speaking as one voice, and there's no pointing of fingers. It's the city either meets their goals or they don't. It doesn't matter who fails. We need to help everyone come up to that better standard.
Councilmember Shannon.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Councilmember Fulmer's question pinged this for me. Do you ever actually recommend changes to the requirements? Or are you more recommending changes to the clarity of the requirements, the enforcement of the requirements, that sort of thing?
No, it very well could include a recommendation to change a requirement. We've sometimes seen things that we say, this is not typical to require this at this point, or it's excessive, or, you know, I don't know what, I'm trying to think of a specific example. But yes, and that's part of getting the feedback, looking at the codes, but hearing the feedback from the applicants and the people submitting is, and looking at, against those best practices, are you making it difficult for the wrong reason? So absolutely. I mean, and those are sometimes, you know, the ones that take policy change, because if it's in the code, it has to come back to council for approval.
Yes. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah. Anyone else on this side? Anyone on this side? All right. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to address this issue? Seeing none, any council comments? Councilmember Beck?
Thank you. I just wanted to make a couple notes about stakeholders that I'm hoping will be involved in this process. People that I've heard from typically are small business owners, and you know, I think a time period of the last 5 years of permitted people, whether that's small businesses or developers, but also individuals that are doing permits of different kinds. I myself submitted a permit for a chicken coop, for example. You know, so there's a whole slew of different opportunities we have for stakeholders. But I think that most of the complaints I've received personally have been from small business owners that have had a difficult time navigating the process, or it's been very slow for them. And the second group that I have heard from are actually our trades, our union trades. Electricians, carpenters, plumbers, the folks that are doing the work but then are being inspected, their work is being inspected. That, I think, is also another key stakeholder group that I would like to be involved. And there are some easy ways to do that, obviously, but I think that that those would be two that might not be, well, in particular, the trades that might not be obvious, but I think are important.
Councilmember Shannon.
And pinging off of that, another stakeholder group that I don't know how you would get, but I think might be important, is people who haven't submitted a permit and are maybe intimidated by the process, or who have never really thought that they could become a developer. I was on Plan Commission last August when we had a community member comment that they had a piece of land that I think he was working as an architect. He wanted to move into development, and he wanted to make sure that the city made room for small developers. And he said, you know, there's a lot of plots in the city. They're too small for the big developers, but the development process is too cumbersome for the small developers. And we know that we need a great deal more housing in Champaign at all levels, at all income levels, all types of housing. And so finding ways to bring more people into that development field would be wonderful. And I'm really, really excited about this process and making it easier. And I just want to make sure that we find ways to involve people who are maybe ready to take the next step. And maybe some of those are tradespeople who are in unions, who they've been in construction. Maybe they would like to start doing their own development. Maybe they would like to start their own contracting firm to do more. And I want to make sure that we make room for them. So thank you very much for the presentation and for doing all of this.
Deputy Mayor Kiles.
Definitely would like to second the comments of my colleagues. Obviously, you know, talking to diverse groups is important to me, particularly African Americans. I wanted to take a second. I don't know if I should be so formal, Mr. Knight, but I remember we had a meeting and talking about the use of the CDAP program. The CDAP program is critical and important, as you all know, that when we talk about inclusion and economic inclusion, we talk a lot about the social side, but we don't talk about the economic side. And without the economic side and more African-American contractors being engaged and involved in the economics of our city, I think that, I know that we won't make the progress that we hope to make long run. And so seeing CDAP and having conversations from when we talked about how to get developers involved and engaged from our meetings, you know, years ago, and now seeing your constant work and your team's work to see that through, I appreciate the work that your team is doing, appreciate the work the city is doing. Obviously, it goes without saying that we appreciate the work that Rachel and her team is and the whole city is doing in this process. But what excited me more, because I knew that we would get all of these pieces right. I knew that all of these questions would be asked. But the question about how do we have it shows that, and Mr. Coleman isn't just a diverse vendor, supply or contractor, well-respected in the community, years and years of experience, and it shows what our city, he is a shining example. His company is a shining example of what we have in our city. And if we continue to seek out and show that we as the city of Champaign, and hopefully, prayerfully, that this would, you know, go out to all of our surrounding communities, we continue to show that we do have African Americans that are ready, willing, and able. I think that, again, I keep on saying think. I know that, again, we'll make even more progress than we hope to make.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Councilmember Fulmer.
I'm sorry, just one quick, I feel like I would be remiss to not say something since a large number of folks in my district are concerned with historic preservation. So that is something that I hope you will also include in your stakeholder survey group.
Thank you. Yeah, we can make sure that we look at that. And I think one thing is that point brings me to mind that I just want to share with you is when we're talking about improving efficiency and timeliness, we're not suggesting that you have to lower your standards. We've worked with communities that have very high standards, very high design guideline standards, architectural review boards that are full of architects. And historic preservation like crazy. We're not asking you to lower your standards. We're saying when you have higher standards, your obligation to be more clear, to educate more, to provide that additional support is greater. And we need to make sure you're set up for that. So we'll definitely, as we factor in the historic piece, it's not to lower that, it's to make sure you're doing the best to get it through efficiently and effectively at that standard you've set.
Anyone else? All right, so alternative one is directing staff to schedule the contract for professional services for consideration on a regular city council agenda. Councilmember Iniguez.
Yes.
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 And yes, you have direction. Thank you. We are now at the point of our meeting for audience participation. Please step forward, state your name and city of residence. Please limit your comments to 5 minutes or less. And Mr. Dale, if you can just wait 1 second, we'll let these guys clear out so that they're not stuck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Champaign City Council. My name is Nicholas Dale. I'm a resident of the city of Champaign. A few meetings ago, I spoke about the disability discrimination that I was subject to here in Champaign from the Champaign Police Department. The complied statutes toll a disabled individual's statute of limitations until 2 years after the removal of disability. So it's basically unlimited until the disability is removed. And you guys can look up the statutes. We won't go much more into that. The police department here has a propensity to lie. They are rewarded for it. I have about 5,000 applications for authority to dispose of state records and local records from the Illinois Secretary of State Archives. This specific one says, this record series consists of files indicating the identify of local law enforcement officers, county and city, who work with the state police. For applicants applying for inspector and covert officer status, the file contain the previous three categories plus requests for covert identification and correspondence authorizing issuance of fictitious driver's license to covert officers. So they're already trained. They have fake IDs and have a propensity to lie. We'll start out strong here. In accordance with the American with Disability Act and the Illinois Human Rights Act, it's also a crime. So this isn't just civil liability, it's criminal liability. Any person who maltreats a person with a mental illness or a person with a developmental disability commits a Class A misdemeanor. And here we have law enforcement misconduct. These are some of the laws I feel that everyone needs to know here in the city. So law enforcement misconduct. A law enforcement officer, a person acting under the color of law, commits law enforcement misconduct when, in the performance of his or her official duties with intent to prevent the apprehension or obstruct the prosecution or defense of any person, he or she knowingly and intentionally misrepresents or fails to provide material facts describing an incident in any report during any investigations regarding the law enforcement employee's conduct. I filed FC 2021-02 on April 2nd. The effective date of this is 7/1/21. This was part of the Safety Act, if I'm not mistaken. My complaint took longer than 90 days to settle. Therefore, there is criminal liability with this case. There is emails that I sent that were left out. I FOIA requested all materials for my complaint. And what I got back, if that's what was given to the city manager and the chief of police, then Lieutenant Nathan Rath and Lieutenant Greg Manzana are guilty of a felony for withholding information. I have a recorded phone call that wasn't included in the attachments. Moving on, knowingly and intentionally withholding knowledge of the material misrepresentations of another law enforcement officer from the law enforcement employee's supervisor, investigator, other person or entity tasked with holding the law enforcement officer accountable. The sentence, it's class 3 felony, and that would mean for number 2 here, the two lieutenants I named are in concert with one another. That's also another felony. Official misconduct. This is for all of your lovely faces to digest. A public officer or employee or special government agent commits misconduct when, in his official capacity or capacity as a special government agent, he or she commits any of the following acts: intentionally or recklessly fails to perform any mandatory duty as required by law, as seen with the law enforcement misconduct. They had a duty to report that. Knowingly performs an act which he or she knows is forbidden by law. The Citizen Privacy Protection Act, the location, the Freedom from Location Surveillance Act. After a meeting or two ago when I spoke about defunding the police and then running into those 8 officers, this is a public demand for a investigation on those officers with those license plates. It is a felony. It is a crime. With intent to obtain a personal advantage for himself or another, he performs an act in excess of his lawful authority. Those officers swarming me had an intent to defer me from defunding the police. An employee of a law enforcement agency commits misconduct when he or she knowingly uses or communicates directly or indirectly information acquired in the course of employment with the intent to obstruct, impede, or prevent the investigation, apprehension, or prosecution. A person convicted of this forfeits their office and is guilty of a class 3 felony. Moving on, don't have much time left. Intimidation. Me saying defund the police and then the police swarming me is an indirect threat, intimidation, to expose a person to hatred, contempt, and ridicule. So that is another crime. So this is more than just civil liability. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council? Seeing none, are there any council comments? Councilmember Beck.
I was hoping that Chief Ludwig could give us a little information about fireworks and what the expectations of fireworks are in our community. I'm specifically thinking of the purchase and use of fireworks by individuals. Backyard fireworks. Because I know tis the season.
Tis the season, that is correct, Councilwoman. Just to give you an overview, the municipal code permits, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. The municipal code does not permit the use of fireworks inside the city of Champaign that traditionally have wicks that can be lit or shoot up in the air. The only thing that is permissible would be, an example would be sparklers. And I discourage that immensely because sparklers burn at around 2,000 degrees. And we had a horrific fire some years ago, maybe I think 2016, when we lost a building over in the town center that was deemed to be started by sparklers. It caught the siding on fire, and then the siding is almost a petroleum-based product, and it ran the side of the building and got up into the attic. So I even would dissuade from using sparklers in the city. So as the fire chief, my point is that please don't use fireworks in the city, whether they shoot or whether they light or whether they're sparklers or whatever the case might be. And the reason why I say that with heightened concern at this point is because of the drought that we are experiencing. The National Weather Service, as of today, deems this specific area geographically as in a moderate to severe drought. And we've seen evidence already in a couple of the fires that we've had in the weeks previous to this of a cigarette butt being thrown or some other type of ignition source, and it just becomes a tinderbox, and the fire escalates very rapidly. So to answer your question without drawing on is that I would ask our citizenry, number one, it's illegal, so don't use fireworks. And the ones that are legal, such as sparklers, please do not use those during this drought conditions. It's really detrimental to the public safety of the community that you not use those. The other thing I would just mention is that the use of fire pits, recreational burn pits for people who might have a small fire in their backyard, I would also not encourage that during this time period also because of the fact, again, that the embers and the dryness of the materials, grass, the homes, the shrubbery, all that sort of stuff. Again, the ignition point of that, it would be very much so escalated fast. So again, I would dissuade any of that being used also. So we've been doing some extensive messaging on our social media, asking people not to use fireworks. Number one, it's illegal. Two, again, sparklers are detrimental during this time when we are such drought conditions. And then three, again, we haven't spoken much to fire pits in the backyards, but again, I would encourage people to move away from that also during this time period. And I would hope that we get some immense rain this weekend. I'm hoping intensely that we have forecasts for rain on Friday and Saturday, and that would just be beautiful if something like that would happen.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Anybody else? City Manager?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a reminder, the July 4th holiday falls on a Tuesday this year, so we will not be meeting as a City Council on July 4th, and by code, it makes the following week automatically a regular meeting. So on July 11th, you'll have a regular meeting followed by our study session.
Sounds good.
Madam Mayor, I move that we enter into closed session for probable litigation followed by adjournment.
Second.
Please call the roll.
Councilmember Kyles?
Yes.
Pianfetti?
Yes.
Shannon?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Beck?
Yes.
Fulmer?
Yes.
Gladney?
Yes.
Enigas?
Yes.
Mayor Finan?
Yes. We are recessed into closed session to be followed by adjournment.